Blog Talk Radio.
Now, in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice, fair use, successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com. Welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Claire Papan, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show. Maury Warshawski is the author of two brilliant books on film funding, The Fundraising House Party, which we covered in another Blog Talk interview, and today Maury is here to discuss his best-selling book, Shaking the Money Tree, The Art of Getting Grants and Donations for Films and Video Projects, third edition. And Carol, I understand that Maury has been a donor to the Roy Dean Film Grants for many years.
Yes, and we're really honored to have Maury with us today and have him as a donor. Maury gives the winner a consultation about raising money and information that he has in his Shaking the Money Tree book. But Maury, I have to say that it's an amazing number of films that have been funded because of your two books. You should be very proud of these books.
Well, I'm blushing. I'm blushing as you say that. Thank you.
Well, they're excellent. Most of us know that to work with you, we have to create our mission and vision and values because you want us to clearly know our purpose as a filmmaker, right?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's one of the things that makes working with me a little bit unusual is that I really ask the filmmaker to look deep inside themselves to ask why they're doing this kind of work. Because the work is so hard. And the hardest thing about the work is having to raise money. Everything else, making the film itself, even though it can be difficult, is a joy. But most filmmakers find looking for money not so joyful. And that means the harder the task is, the more they need a strong driver. And that's why the first work I do with the filmmaker is to get them to be really clear and deep about what their mission is, why they're doing the work, where they want to be 3 to 5 years from now, their vision, and their set of values, because the values underlie everything they're going to do.
And I remember you telling me one time that one of the men who had been to your class let you know that a picture he had drawn in your class, 3 years in the future, he found he had achieved that vision.
Yes, and I jumped out of my seat and gave a cheer when I heard that and read it, because that's the function of vision. So mission, vision, and values, they're three different animals, and they have different functions. But the function of the vision specifically is that it asks you what your dream is, what you're hoping will happen in the future. And what I've discovered in working with filmmakers and other clients is that if you've got 3 or 4 years when you can do the work, you can make a really significant change in your life and in your career. And if you can find that image or a metaphor that drives you, it's a very, very powerful tool. And it's so satisfying when you get close to it as well.
No, I bet it is. Well, I know. I've set goals before. I've always found them to be, one time I asked for a certain amount of money at the end of the year, and I didn't get it that year, and I was really shocked because usually I got things I asked for. But the next year I had it. Exactly the amount of money I asked for I got a year later, and that taught me that you have to have an end date.
Yes. Yes, you need to be persistent and you need to have a goal with a date, something that's measurable.
And the
that
end of
helps
year,
a lot.
I've, You always have to give the year. And I think sometimes, Maury, tying your goals to a holiday, like picture yourself saying on the 4th of July, well, we just locked the picture today at the queue or some holiday so you can relate.
Yes, and in fact, that's why when I take filmmakers to a visioning session or a visioning exercise, I ask them to actually picture in 3D, in full color, and kind of apprehend as specifically as they can what that would look like and where they would be and what the date would be. Because there's a lot of power to actually being able to see and feel and touch and taste that moment. It gets you closer to it.
Absolutely. Well, the next step for a filmmaker, according to your book, is to create their goals. And so how do you suggest they do that?
Well, as soon as they can get really clear about why they're doing the work and what they want to have happen, then they can become strategic. And the whole issue is to be strategic because you want everything that you do to have double duty. In other words, the filmmaker and most of the rest of us have limited access to resources, and those resources are typically time, money, and energy. And you want to make sure that you're targeting all of your time, money, and energy towards activities that are going to pay off for you, that are going to get you closer to your vision. So that's the role of the goal. I think as soon as you can have the mission and the vision straight, then you begin to articulate a set of goals. And then you step back from the goals and say to yourself, how realistic are these goals? Can they actually take place? Can I measure them? And are they in line with my values? Are they in line with the resources that I have? And then you realign those goals, and hopefully you can have a plan that'll move you forward.
A realistic plan, right?
Yeah, it's really important to be realistic because there's another bit of my work that's really important. It's something called momentum. And you never want to underestimate the power of momentum. And what happens if you fail, if you don't reach even small goals, is that you lose momentum. So when I'm working with my clients, I'll say, you can look into the future and you can be as ambitious as you want, but when you start setting these goals, at least for the short term, let's make goals that are really realistic. And let's start looking at things that you can actually make happen, because we want to get the ball rolling. We want some momentum to start. And we want morale to be high. And being successful, even in small ways, raises both morale and momentum.
Yes, it does. We are partners with Indiegogo, and
yeah.
I'll have makers say to me, oh, I'm going to raise $50,000, and how many names on your list? And they say, oh, 2,000. And I say, I think we better re-discuss this and let's reset your goal, because it's so important that they hit it. I mean,
yes.
And what's so interesting is that when you bring them back to reality using a numbers ratio,
right,
and they hit their goal, it is very empowering. You're right, Maury.
Yeah, it's very big. And you'd like to have a goal, maybe a little bit of a reach, a little bit of a stretch, but not too much.
Yeah, because
and Maury, I'm really interested in this topic because
yeah.
The idea of understanding what would be a realistic one and discerning it from something that maybe would take more time to accomplish,
yes,
but still attainable, there's a fine line there. Could you fine-tune that just a little more for us?
Yeah, and, I get asked that a lot, especially now that crowdfunding is so popular. How much do I ask for? And there's no simple rule of thumb, but I can say a couple of things. One is the power of benchmarking. And by benchmarking, I mean looking at what others have been successful doing. So you might want to take a look at how other filmmakers have done their fundraising and how much they've been able to raise. You can also use little formulas like taking a look at how many people you can reach, what percentage might actually respond to you and be conservative in that guess, and then say to yourself, what would be the average donation from each of these people, and multiply, and you usually come up with a figure that's pretty close to what you can get. So, for instance, with the filmmaker who says, I've got 2,000 people on my fan base, and let's say that somewhere between 5% and 10% are going to respond, and let's say that each of them could probably give between $25 and $50. That's the average take. You multiply and you come up with something a little pretty close.
Exactly.
Oh, good.
Right. That's true. All right. Well, Maury, I really like the end of each chapter in the Shaking the Money Tree where you have a recap.
Yeah.
Let's discuss Ruby's rules, because at the end of the chapter, you say when you are not done, when you are done, which is so true. And everyone seems to have that as a closing. Well, the film is finished. But the most important thing is to talk about finding your audience and building your mailing list, really, while you're making your film. Because Forks Over Knives did that, and they have a mailing list of 60,000 names, which
yeah.
means that there is so much money available to them for food and food-related products, right?
Yeah. Yes, and that's the whole trick now is, I don't call it a mailing list, I call it a database.
Right.
The database is at the heart of all your work now, and it points to the new difficulty in being a filmmaker, because there's so many more things you have to do now than you ever had to do before. And part of that is, we used to say finding the audience, and I don't use the word audience anymore. I've kind of drop-kicked it out of my vocabulary. The word now is community.
Right.
You are, as you start doing your work, you are building a community. And the difference between community and audience is a significant difference. It's a big difference. So there's so much to say about this. And you put your finger right on the pulse of it by saying, when the film is done, you're not even close to being done. Because, you know, in my experience, I'd say 99% of the hundreds of filmmakers I've ever worked with have found a way to fund and complete their project. Almost every filmmaker will complete the project. But what doesn't happen is that it gets out to a community, that it gets seen by nearly the number of people who should see it. And that's really a whole other hustle and a lot of other work. And a lot of filmmakers don't realize that, especially first-time filmmakers and emerging filmmakers, how hard that work is. The other thing, too, is that now, because you've got a community, and your work has been to bring people along with you as you make the film, that there's this whole other level of engagement that we never used to have before. That's a double-edged sword. You know, the upside to it is you've got people ready to see the film before it's done because they've been involved with it. They've been watching every move of it. They gave money. They gave time. They might have volunteered. They've done some social networking for the film. So they're ready when it comes out. But the downside is that you have to communicate with them. You've got to have to stay in touch with them because you're now part of a community.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is even more work for filmmakers.
Yes.
Because you're not only making a film, you're building a community around the film. You're doing your own marketing and research, that is, finding that community and then building it. But without that, your film is just, I mean, it won't have the life it will with the community, right?
Exactly. And that's why every filmmaker I've worked with in the last 5 years, I've told it up front, you need a team. Find a team. Too many filmmakers are too isolated.
Yeah.
Work too much by themselves. And now it's impossible to do this work without a team. You must have a team around you.
Yes.
Well, I think that's healthy.
True.
As far as building a team, that's essential as well, as you say. What would you recommend to support them in beginning that build?
Ah. I'm glad you asked that. The first thing you need to do is be really clear about your core values. Because at the center of this team must be a shared set of values. And this is something no one ever talks about. Usually, when you're talking about a team, you're talking about a set of shared skills or skills that you need that you don't have. Like this person can database for me. This person knows how to do research. This person knows how to do this type of software. But what I'm saying that is really important is that the skills are secondary. The shared set of values is primary. Because if you're not sharing the values, then your work together is not going to happen. Sooner or later, there's going to be a divorce and a lot of dysfunction in the team. That's the first thing. The second thing is you do need to be clear about what you're not good at and what you need people to help you with. And the third thing is you need to be able to keep morale up, and at the center of the morale is your mission. So it all comes back again to mission. Because people need to know that what you're doing is important and why it's important. And that gives them the energy and the wherewithal to slog through the really difficult times. I'm going to come back to vision for 1 second here, because the other key to keeping a team together is a shared set of vision, because it's the vision that excites people, that makes them want to do the work and be creative, knowing where you're going, the difference that things are going to make. So that's my quick advice about teams, although there's a lot more to be said about them.
Well, that's brilliant. You really hit the nail on the head there. Okay, well, let's go back to your second chapter, because that starts with, where's the money? Show me the money. And you've answered that. You've listed many places that people can go for money, but I'd like us to discuss the individual donations. And wondered if you could just give us some tips on that one-on-one ask for a donation.
The first thing I want to say is that it's the most powerful and successful ask you can make, statistically speaking. If you can be in front of a person and actually ask them for a donation, you have a high likelihood of success, the highest likelihood of success in any form of fundraising that there is. But there is a little some keys and tricks to doing the ask. And the first is you need a really good pitch. And the second thing is you need to be ready to be both passionate and lucid and logical about your project. And then typically what happens is if you're in front of the person, you're sitting at a table in their office or at a restaurant, and you're able to make the ask, the rhythm to the ask is you begin by having a little friendly chit-chat, but not too much time spent on that. And then the person knows why you're there. They know that you're there to make an ask. So you move the discussion into talking about the project, and you give your pitch, and you ask for some dialogue. You encourage dialogue. You want the person with you to be totally engaged and hope that they'll ask you questions, things that are on their mind. And then when that passes, you must be ready to make the ask. And the first thing that happens in the ask is, and this is really important, you need to look the donor directly in the eye. It's got to be done eye to eye. And then the second thing is you need to make a really direct and very specific ask for a specific amount of money and for a specific part of the project. So you might say something like, well, if you don't have any more questions, and now you're looking them directly in the eye, then we both know why I'm here today. I'm hoping you can make a donation of $10,000 for the post-production phase of my project. So you ask for a specific amount that you've researched in advance for a specific thing, and then the next rule is you have to shut up. You
right.
don't say anything, because the rule in fundraising is the next person who speaks after the ask loses, and you don't want that to be you. And that's often a very difficult moment for a filmmaker or anyone who's doing an ask. And then you wait for a response, and you're either going to get a yes, no, or maybe.
Right. Well, I know when you get the no's that you start counting them, because a good salesman realizes that that no is going to take you to the next ask, which probably will be a yes. There are so many no's and there's so many yeses, right?
Yes. Yes, there are. And the no is a great opportunity for you to find out why. And sometimes you learn a lot from that.
So what do you say to get them to tell you why?
You say, if they say, well, no, I can't give this year, or I'm not going to give this year, then you just need to say very gently, well, thank you so much for the time we spent, but for your kind consideration. Would you mind articulating for me a little more about why you can't give this year? What's holding you back from making a donation? And then you never know what you're going to learn. The beautiful thing about making the personal ask is that most of the time you are going to get a yes or maybe. But when you do get a no, you need to follow it up.
Wow. Okay.
You must have seen that turn around for people one time or two, or you wouldn't be mentioning this.
Yes, because you're not sure what the no is all about. And sometimes it's a problem that you can solve. So it might be a problem with, like, well, I'm really uncomfortable with this budget, or I can't give that much, or this is something that I would have to discuss with my wife or my partner before I can do it. So when those kinds of things come up, you can correct them. If it's something that you can't correct, like they just say, well, I really don't want to fund this. I don't like the project. I don't believe in it. You know, and those things are hard to hear. You just have to not get angry and not get too depressed and let it go and still send a thank you note. Yeah.
Yes,
and
absolutely,
also,
and say, well, the next time I have a project I think you'll be interested in, I'll contact you and leave it that way.
Exactly.
But you're right, you could learn a lot, Maury. I think that it takes a lot of courage.
A lot of courage, yeah.
Right.
And it takes a really strong belief. Yeah, go ahead.
Please finish.
I wanted to go back to this great book on Chapter 2. Inez says that to get yourself an LLC and get your budget created and find a fiscal sponsor. All of those things are important. And I noticed you listed From the Heart your book, and I wanted to thank you very much for doing that. We are.
I'm happy to. You're a great fiscal sponsor. People rave about you.
Oh, this is good to hear. Good to hear. But you do think they should get an LLC, spend the money and go ahead and get it right away?
Yes, I do. I used to be really mixed about this, but I've changed my mind pretty radically. I think you should. And one of the reasons is just to make keep it simpler and more kosher. And the second is I'm pushing a lot of my clients into thinking about asking for investment money as well as donations. And I'd say most of the projects I'm working with lately have included both kinds of money. And if you're going to take an investment, you need an LLC. And you can still have a fiscal sponsor and have your own LLC. But I think it's important to do it.
Good. Good. I do too. So, Claire, you had a...
I do. Yes, I wanted to ask about Chapter 3. You have an outline targeting your core audience, which is so important. Can you go over this for us a little bit?
Yeah, it's so important. It's at the center and heart of everything you're going to do. And I call it an ecology, creating the ecology of the people that you're hoping to reach and that you're hoping will be interested in the program. And I usually begin with like a couple of really large categories. So let's say your film is about the homeless, the elderly homeless. And one category might be health professionals. Another category might be the homeless themselves. Another category might be relatives of homeless. So you begin with really large categories. And then and you start columns. And under each one of these columns of categories, you start listing more specific community members and audiences and organizations and people who might be interested. And if you spend even a little bit of time doing this, you're going to come up with a really rich ecology for your program of people who might buy it, pay for it, sell it, recommend it to their friends, see it on public television. And that's at the center of everything else you're going to do with your project. It's at the heart of your fundraising. Typically, the ecology, once you create it, is so fertile that it gives you a lot of ideas for fundraising. So it's really important.
Exactly. And it's amazing when you start mapping that all out that all those little groups can become a big audience for you.
They can, and they can give you money. It leads you to money. It always leads you to money. This is where your money's going to come from.
Okay, well, you covered the pitch so good in the book. Can you just give us a few tips on creating a good pitch?
Well, the first thing is really understand why you're making the film. And then the second thing is really understand what it's about and see if you can articulate that in a few words. And these things begin to be the building blocks of what could be a pitch. You usually need a couple of different pitches. But you want to remember that at the heart of the pitch, key to the pitch is passion. You have to feel something about the film every time you give the pitch. So you need to create a pitch that you know you can deliver with some passion. Because if you're pitching your project to me and I don't feel some passion from you, then you're not going to feel any passion from me. That's really important. And the other thing to understand about the pitch is that it's a hook. You're trying to create something that's going to get people interested and involved in wanting to talk to you. Because what you want the pitch to generate is a desire for dialogue, to want to know more. So that's why I like a pitch that's only 20 seconds long, no more than that. And that you can deliver with passion and lucidly and clearly any time of day or night, wherever you are. It's such an important tool for your toolkit. And it gets you money. It gets you people who are going to be interested in you. You should be able to deliver it when you're in line at Safeway waiting to check out. If I sneak it to your bedroom and we wake you up in the middle of the night, you should be able to give me your pitch immediately with passion. So, and then the other thing that's important is you want to be able to know that the pitch is the beginning of a conversation. It's not the beginning of a monologue. You want, after you give the pitch, to hope that the person says, "Wow, that's really interesting. Tell me more."
Yeah.
And if they don't, move on and talk to somebody else at the party.
Well, Carol, I need to let you know we just have a couple of minutes left. And so whatever else you need to ask in this last moment, and also, Maury, I want to invite you to share how people can reach you, the best way to reach you, what your website is, et cetera. So, Carol, go ahead with your question, and we just have a moment for that answer, and then, Maury, please share how we can reach you.
Wow, that's
fast. Mm-hmm. Yes. The thing is that I just have to say that your book is priceless, both books. I really love them.
Thank
both.
You.
And they are things that just don't go out of vogue. The things that are in here are tried and true and really important for everyone that's funding a film. And it's for shorts, docs, and features, Maury. It's all in there. So how do people reach you? Tell us.
Well, the best way is to come to my website, warshawski.com, warshawski.com. And you can always send me an email from there, drop me a note, see what I'm up to. I always list my travel plans and my upcoming workshops there. And my books are available for sale there as well, right on my website. That's the easiest way to get me. And if you email me, I almost always respond pretty quickly.
Okay. You couldn't ask for more. Thank you so much for sharing all this information, Maury.
My pleasure. Yes. Good luck to everyone.
Thank you, Maury.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I want to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Productions. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAILKEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at FromTheHeartProductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.